Welcome to All About Art. My name is Alexandra, and I'm an art historian, curator, and writer. Within this podcast, topics relating to art history, cultural policy, the art sector, as well as a large range of other art-related topics will be covered. Conducting critical discussions, having entertaining exchanges, or just enjoying some relaxing chats? All About Art is where you'll find it all. Join me in exploring and developing cultural discourse. Welcome to another episode of All About Art. In this episode, I sat down with Sophie Novakovska, the artist manager and curator whose Instagram handle makes a huge statement as the professional art bullshitter. Listen on to hear me ask Sophie about her Instagram and how she stays true to her opinions, meaning she voices her honest critique surrounding various exhibitions and artworks, while also being aware that her audience is vast. We also talk about the plethora of professional projects Sophie undertakes, spinning plates involving artist management, curation, and mentoring. I chat to her about Meat Market, a recent curatorial project of hers which took place in a butcher shop in South London, as well as, of course, censorship, be it from others or from yourself. Thank you, Sophie, for coming on the podcast and having such a great, open, and fun chat with me. Also, thank you to our sponsors at Synergy Associates, the art world tech gurus, for supporting this episode's production at their clubhouse on Pall Mall. You can find more about Synergy and their facilities in the show notes. Before I dive in, I wanted to let you lovely listeners know that All About Art is on Patreon. So if you want some behind the scenes content, maybe a bit of merch, the chance to get one-on-ones with me and my guests, or you're simply wanting to support this project, I would be absolutely thrilled if you decided to sign up. You can do so through the link in the show notes. I also wanted to say thank you to those who have already signed up. Your support means the world, and it makes the further production, improvement, and growth of the podcast possible. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful. And now, on to the interview. Welcome to the podcast, Sophie.
Hello.
I am so thrilled that we were able to get together for an episode. You are a freelance curator and mentor, and you work as an artist's manager and a marketing specialist for the creative industry. You also founded the Instagram account, Professional Art Bullshitter, where you talk about your curatorial work and write exhibition reviews, but you also touch on topics that are often censored in the art world, something that we'll chat about in depth more later on. But before we dive into that, I would love to start us off with your background and your education. How did you get into the arts, and how has your journey in the sector been so far?
I grew up in Poland, where only painting and sculpture are considered as true art. At least that's how the public schools were presenting it to me. Mm-hmm. So I believe that there is only one road that you can take to enter the art world in Poland or become an artist, which is you have to attend the art school, art high school, and then go to Academy of Fine Arts. And just maybe after that, you will actually become an artist. So no one actually in my family is from the art world. But I was very lucky to have very supportive parents who always helped me to get some classes in painting or play guitar, piano, or any other hobbies that I wanted to try. So when my dad moved to England when I was 7 or 8, that actually helped me and my sister moved to England as well, to Cambridge, to study while I was studying art, and my sister was studying criminology. So again, I was the only person in my whole family who went this crazy road. And I think at the beginning, my parents were quite scared because of that.
Yeah.
I think also because in Poland, when you're studying art, you're mastering your skills in painting or sculpture, or for example, printmaking. And I was extremely surprised when I was studying my BA in Cambridge that basically half of the people didn't know how to draw. Mm. And so basically everything on anything could have been art. You just need to have a concept. So when I was graduating, the pandemic started. So I spent a year making jewelry and small sculptures. And in the meantime, I applied to Royal College of Art for MA curating, and I got in. So then when the pandemic stopped, I moved to London, and then I didn't know basically anyone over here, and I didn't even know what I like in art, because even though I was studying for 3 years, I was, you know, trying to be an artist, but I didn't know what it means. So when I moved to London, I started going to galleries and using my Instagram just to make like small notes for myself, what I like, what I don't, and why, just trying to understand what is actually happening in the art world and what art world even means. So this is exactly how I actually entered the art world. I was going to the galleries and exhibitions, tagging all of the artists, and actually a lot of emerging artists are very happy to support you as well when you're supporting them.
Yeah.
So exactly, for me, entering the art world meant supporting others and documenting my my journey. So in the meantime, it turned out that I'm quite good at marketing, and that a lot of art dealers, small galleries and artists actually need help with marketing, on developing their social media, because it very often just takes so much time and effort to actually prepare everything and then actually make the content. So I was helping with creating strategies, or even helping with the art fairs, like basically preparing the whole brand identity of how it's going to look. Yeah, a lot of art dealers, small galleries and artists actually needs help with their social media or marketing. So for the past few years, I've been working with different art fairs or on different projects that needed the development of their brand identity. And I was also watching how this very commercial art world, how repetitive, fake and boring actually it is. Exactly, and how people are treating others without respect. Yeah. And I didn't want to be part of it. I really wanted to share my skills and my knowledge with others, with other people like me. So maybe those who don't really have that much experience or who are just starting in the art world. So this is where I also thought that doing more studio visits might be very beneficial for artists and for myself. So I was visiting a lot of studios, and this is how my journey with mentoring started, and then became the artist management.
Yeah. I think that's a really important aspect to consider when, like, if people are listening in who might be starting their career or who might not know where to go when they're studying art history or studying curating or doing something along those lines. And I think it's so great to just say, like, it is really beneficial to ask to go to studios, to go meet artists, to go to exhibitions, to go see art. I think that stuff like that is really, really great. And I want to stress that for like the next generation of like emerging arts and cultural professionals, I guess, is to be doing that, because that's also not only how you build a network, but it's also how you define your own taste. As you said, like, you weren't sure what you liked, what you didn't like. And so that's a really good way to build that. But I would love to structure this chat based off of all of the different hats that you wear, because there are quite a few that you juggle. The first thing I want to chat to you about is curating. And we can take the opportunity to talk about your most recent endeavor, which is titled Meat Market, and is taking place in May and in June in two iterations. I actually came to the opening on Thursday, but this podcast will unfortunately come out after both iterations are done. But I want to know, what was the inspiration behind it? And can you tell me about some of the challenges that you faced when putting it on?
I think there were a lot of situations and inspirations that led me to this project. And I think, as I mentioned before, I was in the same situation as other artists not that long time ago. So I was also very struggling with selling my art, because I loved conceptual art. I loved making installations, or some of the artworks just existed for a very short period of time. So I just wasn't able to actually be an artist in the sense of, you know, exhibiting very often, because my art was just so weird.
I love that. My art was just so weird.
Exactly. A lot of my tutors told me that I should have a consistent practice, because, you know, once I leave the education, what am I going to do? I was making like huge installations, you know, where I'm going to store them, or, you know, what will happen with them after the exhibition. And that was a huge problem for me and also for other people who were encouraged to be experimental. But at the same time, tutors weren't telling us how to actually maintain our practice after the education. And even now, studying at the Real College of Art, it's exactly the same. But I know that a lot of painters and sculptors who do need a lot of space and light, they really struggle to get out from the education and then find a space or like even the mindset to continue what they've been doing at education, because there's no one leading them anymore, which is extremely stressful when, you know, people are telling you that you should keep going and keep going, applying for opportunities. But there are just so many, other people who are in London as well. I got bored of seeing safe and decorative art in just white cube spaces. Also because it's quite unnatural, like how often do you actually spend time in a space without any furniture with extremely white walls?
Yeah.
So I basically found this space, which was weird. It was smelly, dark, and super unsafe.
Yeah, I know. Just like for listeners who haven't been able to go to Meat Market, when I was there on Thursday, it's in an old butcher's shop, and there are these stairs that are so precarious. And Sophie had the idea to thankfully put like a rope there that you could pull yourself up. And like, it looked daunting, but it was fine to get up and down. I was wearing a skirt. Like, it was okay. It was doable. But when I was going in the back rooms where, you know, I think it used to be the old fridge, maybe it did have a slight tinge in terms of like the smell was still left over a bit. Like it really did stimulate all of the senses in a way, because it was quite like dark. And then you're looking in the corners and you're thinking about the previous history of the space, but then you're also smelling the previous history of the space, but then you're looking at a work that relates to the space in a way, but also is just a complete like juxtaposition to what was happening beforehand.
Yeah, I think that this is exactly why artists really enjoyed working over there.
Yeah.
Because I invited them to do whatever they wanted. So they came in, looked at the space, and then they just started experimenting with their ideas and the concept of this space. So basically, I invited artists who were making bold art, and because of that, they were struggling very often. So one of the challenges was that it took me 4 months full time to actually put this show up. When you're working as a freelance curator, it's marketing, it's answering emails, visiting artists. And because I invited 26 artists to the whole project.
26?
Yeah, because there's 30.
Oh, because of the two. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it took me, I mean, I still didn't manage to actually visit all of them, but exactly, you know, even if I was visiting only two artists in one day, then, you know, traveling, you know, talking to them, and then, you know, really spending a lot of time to understand what they are doing, why they're struggling, so that I can actually help them with this project. Because for me, it wasn't only important to exhibit their art, because, well, I know that there aren't as many opportunities for sculptors or people who make art that is not for sale.
Yeah.
But I really wanted to support them marketing or with mentoring. So another extremely big struggle was to actually pay for everything. And I think a lot of people were thinking, wondering how I actually managed to pay for it. The first price that I got from the landlord, it was very high, but I thought that I really believe in this project and I can make it happen. So I agreed to it. Then I started organizing everything. And when I got the contract, it turned out that I also need to pay VAT, service fee, deposits, and for bills. So it was just horrible. So without help of my friends, family, and without my savings, I just wouldn't be able to do it all. I think also because this is I've been working with galleries and different companies on helping them as a curator to put up shows.
Yeah.
But this is the first show that I've ever created only by myself. I know I hate people who are helping me with design or technicians, but basically the whole, you know, or actually organizing it, that was only me.
Yeah.
And it was so much energy and time. But at the same time, I knew that it needs to be the top quality also because of who I am as a person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always like to do everything that I can in my power to actually get the top quality, because I don't want to put up shows that are meaningless, basically. I really want to help artists not only through putting their works on the wall. I really want the viewer to come and have some kind of feelings, even if that's disgust, shock, or, you know, any unpleasant feelings.
Yeah.
That's also a part of the art, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. If we are staying with the metaphor of different hats and wearing your responsibilities, I would love to talk about the importance of mentoring, which probably kind of goes hand in hand with being an artist manager in a way. So can you tell me more about your experiences in that area?
I think that being a curator for me, it's not only curating shows and not only marketing. I like to use this word as like an umbrella for everything that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And mentoring is one of these elements. And I think that the most important aspect of mentoring is actually listening to people, like truly listening. And the mentoring is not only about helping artists find opportunities, editing their text, or helping with marketing strategies.
Mm-hmm.
It's being there for them when they actually need it. So it's like being a friend, but actually someone from a professional background.
Yeah, a professional friend.
A professional friend. So mentoring with me very often starts in two different ways. Sometimes artists approach me and they know exactly what they want to achieve, what they want to achieve or where they want to get to. But there are also other artists who have no clue, and basically they need someone who will have a conversation with them, how they feel about their practice right now. Do they feel like they can work maybe on something, or whether they should follow everyone else applying for opportunities, or maybe find a sponsorship or find an institution with which they can collaborate. So I talk to them and then try to define the next steps.
If I may say, like, that sounds really, really invaluable. Like, it sounds like, because we always say, you know, oh, you know, you need to find what's right for you. Or if you're going to approach a gallery, you need to find what's right for you, or like look at which gallery is right for you, and so on and so forth. But what does that mean in practice? What is that like concretely? And like, okay, but how do I think about what's right for me? And I think that, as you say, there are so many different options that an artist could take, but how do you know what direction? And I'm not even like, not just artists, but like if we think about curators, if we think about emerging arts professionals, like what direction could we go in?
The problem starts with education, because yeah, we spend either 3 years with our MBAs or 1-2 years with our MA, and there isn't enough time for even tutors to talk to students about how they can take their practice or ideas to the real world.
Yeah.
And there are these kind of assumptions that, for example, if you find a gallery that will represent you, this is the success. But very often this dream is just fading when you actually get there, because there's a lot of shit in relationships and contracts between galleries and artists. And yeah, we very often talk about finding the right gallery or finding the right path. But it's extremely difficult when you have this kind of ideas created by the society or maybe even their environment around you, because everyone is trying to get the gallery, everyone's trying to sell their works. But what if you're someone who exactly don't have products or don't have art or even practice? It doesn't really matter if you're an artist or a curator. What if you cannot monetize your skills or your art? So this is where I think mentor is quite helpful, because they can look at your practice from a different perspective. You know, they look what is happening in your life or in your career, and then they try to find answers or at least help you get to the next stage.
I definitely think that that's really important, because I think for some people, mentoring is such a unknown realm of something like as a possibility. And I think that, you know, I do mentoring for the UCL Art Business Society, However, I think that it's a little bit different because it's a group of people, not one-on-one per se. So it takes a little bit of a different form. But I also had a mentor who is based in Austria, who actually kind of helped guide me through the process of putting on the All About Art anniversary party. And so this person was actually quite instrumental in helping me structure, like she helped me put together an event proposal because I was like, I have no idea where to start. And she was like, look at mine and I can like help. This is what I think would be good for yours and what you should take from this. And I'm showing you an example. Like it was so helpful and like, it's so amazing. And actually, yeah, I think mentoring is so, so valuable. And it's something that's underrated in a way.
Definitely. I think a lot of artists or even just creative participants, they think that investing in their practice is only through buying, for example, materials for their painting. Mm. And when you think about investing £30 per year, for example, for some kind of membership like VAA, so Visual Artists Association or Artist Newsletter, we think, oh, that's actually quite a lot, £30 per year. But it's actually not. When you think about how much you pay for going to a cinema or going to a restaurant, that's just one night off, basically. Mm-hmm. I know it's extremely hard to find a mentor. So there aren't that many curators or maybe artist advisors who are visible or available to everyone because very often they already have a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. But I also have a mentor, so it just happened through the friendship with another curator who also helped me a lot with putting up Meets Market project. Because even though I knew how to do it within the commercial art world, there were so many aspects I didn't know how to do it only by myself, only because there were so many of them, and he had way more experience in that. Mm-hmm. You don't have to find a professional mentor. It can be your friend. It can be someone who just have more experience than you. And as we talked during the panel discussion a few weeks ago, it's worth asking questions and asking for help because otherwise, how would someone actually know and how would they know that you actually need this help? Or no one will answer your question if you don't ask it. So yeah, being even just vulnerable to say that I don't know something or that I need help. It's very normal. And if someone is helping you, it's very possible that you will help them with something in the future.
Yeah.
So it's like an exchange and mutual support in the art world is extremely important.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that like, because you mentioned the panel talk, which actually is connected to my next question. So I'll ask that in a second. But it's very much this aspect of like being open to approaching someone or seeking out advice. And like, I cannot stress this enough, my belief in not keeping your goals quiet and not keeping your struggles or your questions quiet. I think that it's so important to open it up to people because people are willing to speak. People are willing to help. And it's so wonderful when they do. Like, I wouldn't be where I am and you probably wouldn't be where you are if we didn't have people who helped us along the way, either support us, give us advice, be behind the scenes, like all of these things are so incredibly important. And if you don't ask, you're never going to get. And so it's just being open. But also if you ask someone and they don't respond or they kind of reject you in a way, that's okay too. It's all right because there will be someone else who will be up for it. Because I recently asked somebody actually to go out for coffee with me because I wanted her advice and she just completely ignored me. And it could be because she's really busy. It could be because she has no interest in helping me or give me advice. And that's totally fine. But I think as like from a personal standpoint here now and being also open to share that, it's like, oh, it kind of stings. And then you're like, no, it's okay. It's okay. Because not everyone has the capacity either. And that's all right. And sometimes I have to say no to things too. But because we just mentioned it, you recently participated in a panel talk as part of the All About Art second anniversary event in April. So first off, thank you again for doing that. That was really amazing. For anyone who wants to listen into that, we recorded it via Instagram Live and we posted it on both my Instagram as well as the All About Art podcast's Instagram. So you are welcome to go and listen to that. I wanted to ask you a question that I asked on the panel, which will probably open up all different avenues of discussion around censorship, also in a way like self-censorship within the arts. How do you think having an online presence as an arts practitioner could impact your career later on in terms of hireability?
I think that I can already see how valuable it was for me to be on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So we spend more time on Instagram or on social media than we go to galleries. So it's normal that we see art more often on our screens rather than in our environment. And it's the same with making new connections. We interact with more people through social media rather than in real life, at once at least. So social media to me saves a lot of time and energy, even though coming to private views is very nice because you can interact with a lot of people, drink some alcohol, but after my very long day, I only want to go to bed and then chill out. At least this is how I rest, rather than interacting with even more people where I need to look fabulous or I need to be very interactive with everyone. So Instagram became a platform through which I connect with people, but at the same time, this is how people find me.
Yeah. So it's like an online... what's the word? Like portfolio in a way.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, well, I don't remember last time when I was asked for a CV. Basically, my Instagram is my portfolio and my CV. So people know where I go, who I know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly how, well, I get my potential client very often. They see my services, they see who I work with. And then they want to connect and then we go for a coffee together. So I can already see how beneficial it is to be on social media and just have the virtual presence.
Yeah. Do you think that if you later down the line, let's say you want to work for an organization instead of work for yourself, because currently you're working for yourself. So if you were to go and like apply to who knows where, do you think that your Instagram might get in the way or do you think it'll be really positive?
For now, all of my potential clients or my current clients are quite happy with what I present with myself and what I talk about on my Instagram. And I think that I'm still too small to actually be a threat to some institutions. But yeah, I know that there are some situations when curators start working for an institution or a gallery. And some topics are starting to be uncomfortable for this company.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the freedom is not actually there when you're working for someone, when you're working for yourself. It sometimes is also quite uncomfortable when I'm, for example, criticizing an institution, when I'm criticizing a gallery at which, for example, an artist was exhibited who I'm friends with.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully I will not have any problems, but... yeah, well, this is the world we live in. And even though being politically correct and, you know, trying not to offend anyone is such a big thing, still the free speech is not really a thing that a lot of galleries or institutions are very into because something might not look good.
Yeah, I think that that's a really important thing to stress is like, you know, and let me know if you agree is like, maybe if you were to have this online presence, like you with your Instagram and your website and your projects, or like me with my podcast where, you know, I work full time for a gallery, but I collaborate with other galleries all the time. Like, is that a conflict of interest? What does that look like? And I made sure to speak to my employer about it before starting. But like, I think what's important to keep in mind for employers, right, it is... if you're going to hire someone, you're hiring the whole person and you should keep in mind that they have their, what is it called? The unique selling point, USP, right? So like people have their USPs, I guess, in a way. And part of that is their critical thinking or the way that they approach sharing their opinions or the way that they look at things in a different light, because God, it would be so boring if people always had the same opinions and all agreed on what was good or what was bad, right? And I think it's so important to stress that. As like a side question with that, what was the inspiration behind your Instagram handle? Because how do you feel that people react to it?
So everything started when I was doing my BA and researching the origins of creativity, authorship, and originality. So in theory, nothing is actually original. We come up with ideas because we've seen something, we've heard something, we experienced something, and then we connected all of these experiences or materials into one. Also because I really love conceptual art and social engage, and I just admire artists who invite the audience to do something, or where I'm thinking about who's actually the author of the project of the artwork. So it always excites me to have a conversation about who's the real artist. So some of the artists have a lot of assistants or even manufacturers, even though, you know, they are the authors of the idea. They're, as a person, as a human being, they're very often not able to make something by themselves because sometimes it's just too big or it's just too demanding. So I really like this kind of excitement of, yeah, just questioning who's the real artist behind the artwork. But when you also think about the creative industry, actually the artworks are the only products of the creativity that do not include all of the persons who worked to actually make it happen. When you look at the film or music industry, there is a huge list of people who are credited, you know, like writers or designers.
Oh yeah, every single like 3D artist or like designer is included, every single song, all of it. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. And then when you look at the very big artists like Damien Hirst, a lot of people who are working for them, they cannot say it out loud or they cannot admit it just while working for them. They can only say it to their friends or to the other employers only after they actually worked for them, because it's like, you know, big secret. But why? What is the reason behind it? You know, we know that artists are these big brains with huge ideas, but they're still humans. And how is it possible that they made a huge artwork only by themselves? You know, why we're not crediting all of the assistants or other people who are helping?
Yeah.
So I think that's because there's a lot of bullshit in the art, whether people are aware of it or not, that they're bullshitting. I thought that it was just a very funny, set of words, being a professional art bullshitter.
Yeah. I love how, like, before we started this episode, we were like, can we cuss? No, no, no. And it's like, the title is going to have the word shit in it. Like, I'm definitely going to put professional arts bullshitter, art bullshitter, damn it. Because we met over Instagram because I came across your account and then we followed each other and then you messaged me, which is something it's a strategy of yours as well to just check in with the people who followed you. And then we ended up going for a coffee and we ended up getting along really well. And I mean, no, we went to an exhibition, but then we also went and got incredibly overpriced
mulled wine,
like incredibly overpriced. It was like £18 for two. So if anyone's near Old Street and goes to a pub near there, just stay away, find a different one. I can't remember the name of it, but
me either.
Yeah. But anyway, I thought that it was incredibly fun. And I love things like that. I love things that are slightly satirical. I love things that kind of take the piss a bit. I love things that don't, as someone who takes herself so seriously all the time, I do love things that don't take themselves too seriously because it kind of just adds a little bit more fun. It's like, we're not brain surgeons here. We are allowed to have fun with these things. That is what the creative industry is also about. That's one of the positive things about working in this sector. Have you ever had really negative reactions to it and people just being like, that's really unprofessional or like, oh my God, I hate it or anything like that?
I think I only had awkward reactions.
Awkward, okay.
So when someone knows me through Instagram, they actually really like the handle.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes quite awkward when I give people my business card and it says professional art bullshitter. Or yeah, when someone approaches me and they want me to work for them, but they've never seen actually my like website handle. So again, it's professionalbullshitter.com. Even for me, it just feels awkward. But I had recently quite a few comments from different critics that maybe I should reconsider using just maybe a different tag because it doesn't look professional to have exactly professional bullshitter because, well, they were thinking if I want to write reviews professionally, then it might not look just rides.
Right. Because we need to adhere to that status quo. Am I right? It has to look right.
Yeah.
But right by whose standards?
Exactly.
Going off of that, I would love to talk about censorship in the arts in a wider sense, not just from a personal professional point of view. And I will give you the mic on this. I mean, metaphorically, because we're both sitting in front of microphones. But I'll pass it over to you to decide where we should start on that conversation.
I think everything that we discussed is basically coming to the same thing. So the aspect of money. So as I said before, there is an assumption that if you get a representation by a gallery, then it means that you succeed, which is very often a very big disappointment when you actually get over there. Or there's another assumption that if you're selling your artworks or exhibiting, you're a successful artist.
Yeah.
But it creates a lot of problems for a lot of artists whose practice is just not for consumption, like in the terms of buying their artworks.
Like commercial consumption in a way, I guess.
Exactly. So yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of artists are trying to adjust to the expectations, whether that's adjusting to trends, curators, galleries. So I think this is where the lowest censorship starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we touched on most of the things that I wanted to talk about over here. Again, being politically correct or not offending anyone, it's extremely important, or at least visible in Western culture a lot. In Eastern, where I come from, so Poland, a lot of people, well, it's not as visible over there. I think also because we don't have as many international people over there. So, you know, if we are saying, people would really tell you straight away that they don't like something or that they don't like you, for example.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, what, coming back to this very Western art world, being politically correct and not offending anyone is such a big thing these days, especially in the Western culture. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I feel that most often it hides a lot of conversations that are extremely important. Because artworks, for example, which are addressing the problem of housing crisis in England, who's going to buy this artwork? Or if someone is putting a small plastic pig in a gelatin or silicone, again, who's going to buy this artwork when being vegan or vegetarian is such a big thing? So going to art fairs or very commercial galleries, the topics that are very often controversial are just not visible over there, because very often people with money, they only want to see the beautiful, the beauty of the world, rather than seeing the problems that are actually over there. Also because you cannot monetize problems, I think.
Yeah. I mean, half of the problems are problems because they don't get enough funding anyway. And then trying to monetize that is a whole nother layer, isn't it?
Exactly.
So finally, a fun question to end the episode. And this is something that I ask all of my guests here on All About Art. And I am aware that I did ask you this during the panel discussion. So sorry about that. But if you could pick one artist from art history to have dinner with, who would it be and why?
So I think that I will answer the same thing that I answered during our panel discussion.
Yeah.
So it would still be John Baldessari, because he was the best conceptual artist the whole history. He was repeatedly writing, I will not make any more boring art. And I think this is just what I'm looking for in the art world. I just don't want to look at any boring art. So yeah. He's my favorite.
All right. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Sophie, for coming on the episode and for sharing your opinions and expertise. It was an absolute joy.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that is it for today on All About Art. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave me a rating or a review, as it helps more people discover the show. Also, feel free to share with your friends, or if you share on social media, tag me and get in touch. Thank you so much for listening.